My guest today, Steve Kearney, director of Birmingham Van Centre.
Good afternoon.
Hello to you, sir. We will get into everything vans and your career shortly, but could you give us a brief introduction to yourself, who you are?
Yeah, certainly. Steve Kearney, Birmingham Van Centre, very much what it says on the tin. I've been in the motor trade now for 30 plus years. You might find that difficult to believe, I know. But not an industry I planned to get involved in when I started work many, many years ago, but it's where I ended up. Call it destiny, call it fate, I don't know. But I've had a lot of fun out of it, and I've created a good lifestyle out of it as well, and two ex-wives have had houses off the back of it. So working on number three at the moment.
Excellent. So we met originally through Blues Business Club, Birmingham City Football Club, last season, where yourself and Birmingham Van Centre were very prominent. You've been in the automotive industry, like you say, 1999, is that correct?
Yeah, long time, yes.
So what was it? You say you fell into it, which is most people end up in the careers, isn't it? How did you fall into it originally?
Well, originally, when I was at school, and when I was at school in those days, you had a careers day, and you were either going to be a builder, a plumber, a train driver, a nurse. You were never going to be
a scuba diver.
Yeah, you were never going to be a doctor or a surgeon or anything like that. But I always wanted to be a policeman, and that was always where I'd set my sights on, and that was everything I worked towards. And when I was 15, I used to work as a cleaner in a butcher's for 80 pence an hour after school. And over the road from the butcher's in Erdington was the auto trader office, but it would have been the Auto Mart then, for those of us old enough to remember the 12-page black and white magazine. So they used to do telesales of an evening between 6 and 9. So I used to finish at the butcher's at 8:45. And I thought, I quite like the idea of going and trying this telesales game. So went and had an interview with them, lied about my age, because you had to be at least 16 to work there. So worked at the butcher's, get changed, go and work at the Auto Mart / Auto Trader. I did love it because there were only two men in an office of about 60 ladies. So it was very entertaining. And was planning to do my sixth form, do my A-levels, and just got the sales bug. Love the environment, love the buzz, love the banter. And I was actually very good at it as well. I can still remember the scripts 30-odd years later. I can still remember it now. It used to annoy people, phoning them at home on the landline. And
after six as well. That's when a lot of people look suspicious at the phone, isn't it?
So it used to be 6 till 9. So I worked with them then. I was earning over £1,000 a month at 15 and a half. So it was like, this is the life. And they enjoyed having me there. So once I turned 16, told them the truth about my age. They were not a problem. Carried on working there. 17 passed my driving test, and they made me a sales rep, field sales rep. So I had a C registration, 1985 C Reg Astra 1.2, and I was flying high, and I had an area, and that area at the time was the Black Country, and one of my clients was a van dealer, and I love this guy Mike was the Peter Stringfellow of the automotive industry, and whenever I'd go to his offices and showroom, the energy was great, the banter was great. And hit 18, applied for the police, as I always said I would, got accepted, but there was a deferment of 12 months at the time due to budget cuts. And Mike said, come and sell vans for me. And we shook hands on a package. There was no written contract. There was no physical evidence of what we've agreed. It was, just hand your notice in. And that's what I did, and went to work for Mike. And we just had the best of times in the 80s into the early 90s, at which point I decided, do you know what, I'm enjoying this, but I want to go and do it for myself. Borrowed £10,000 from Lloyds Bank at 40% APR, and went out and bought two vans and parked them on the street corner, and would just sell them to people who were driving past. This was pre-internet. Used to have a little advert in the auto, also Trader Auto Mart at the time. And hard work, persistence, consistent, took me to really, over that 30 years, to where we are today, where, you know, we are Birmingham's number one independent dealer, and Google rate us at that. And in the last 3 years, I think we're on £14 million worth of sales over the last 3 years. We had a particularly good COVID, which I know we've touched on previously. And here we are now. Still got passion for it, still got energy for it. Still want to make money. You know, we can all live in the twee world of we're not doing it for money. We do it for to be givers and generous to society. But I'm a big believer you've got to earn the money first, and then you can donate the money and give and also your time. And in the last couple of years, been asked to start doing some mentorship and work with people outside of the business, because a 30-year career, as enjoyable as it's been, we've had the high highs, and boy, have we had the low lows, and we have the what am I doing here moments, and why the hell, and did that just happen, and the WTF, and that never changes. I did genuinely think the bigger we got and the more successful we became, the problems disappear and dissipate, and I would be on the golf course and on a yacht, and that didn't happen. And yet LinkedIn tells me that should be happening now. But it hasn't. But I'm still enjoying the job, and I've got a great team of people, and I get to work alongside people like yourselves and Birmingham City.
You say there, obviously, that's a fantastic story, and that is proper grassroots, built from the bottom. Yeah. So, God, a lot of the biggest changes. You say then, the internet.
Oh yeah, for us particularly, the internet. And we're going back, 15, 16 years? We're not ringing back a huge amount of time. We were all there, those of us of a certain age. Well, will it catch on? Will it work? It's never going to work. People of a certain generation are never going to use it. And we went through the dial-up days of having to unplug the fax machine. In fact, we noticed on our invoices of the day, we still have a fax number on there, so which needs to update. But the internet has given... There were two schools of thought. It'll destroy the business or the automotive industry, or it'll create a different version of that business. And there was a huge pivot for all of us, because now, going back to the magazine days of the Auto Trader, which is where we advertised, and we're still very prolific with the digital medium now for Auto Trader. The guy used to get his magazine on a Friday afternoon, and then Saturday, Sunday were your two busy days, because they walk in with the Auto Trader magazine, which is still the brand leader today, it for what we're doing. But the internet now has given people 24/7 access to information, knowledge, and power, and pricing particularly. But we've worked that to our advantage, because we're not set up to be the cheapest. It's very hard to be the cheapest. It's impossible. It's impossible, isn't it, to be the cheapest and the best. And we are really, really good at what we do. But it's attracting a better level of customer to us, because these customers, like yourselves, are appreciative that you cannot be cheap and you cannot be good. So we're not trying to attract that element of the market. So our pricing structure, we're kind of in that middle ground of not as much as the main dealer, but more than Bob's Autos or Curbside Autos down the road. And we were very scared that customers would just be purely motivated on price, early internet days, and it never even reared its head. Price is important, but it isn't the be-all and end-all, particularly on used vans, where quality and what happens if I buy this van and this goes wrong, are you going to be there for us? And when you're the cheapest, no, they're not going to be there for you. But we get our customers coming and telling us the horror stories of the van that they bought on, eBay, and they go, oh, and this happened and that happened. I go, yeah, but it was cheap, wasn't it? They go, bloody hell, it was so cheap and there was no VAT on it. And you're like, yeah, because if it's worth more at auction, why is it on eBay? Somebody's selling it. And you know those hidden delights of not just outstanding finance, but the amount of customers who tell us they bought stolen vans and cars off digital platforms. And they're always sucked in on the price. But we use that analogy, you know, when we have a builder customer, and you're talking about price. Are you the cheapest builder? No, nowhere near. But we're really good at what we do. Well, there you go. There's your answer. So we have an incredibly, probably a third of our business month in, month out, is repeat and recommendation. To that stage now, where we're fortunate to have some really strong customers who phone us up and go, we've had a van blow up, or we've had a van breakdown, or it's off the road. Have you got a white Transit? And we'll go, we've got this, and it's this price. They go, yeah, we'll have that. And there isn't even a discussion on pricing. They know it's going to be right, but also they know if there's a problem, and I'm not talking about it's under warranty. I'm talking about those niggly little things, the radio buttons aren't working, which is never covered under anybody's warranty. Not a problem, Dave, John, whatever. We'll change it for you. And they love that element of you take care of all those little annoying features that stop us enjoying driving around in the van or using the van. Well, certainly from owner operators like yourselves, where you then have your driver moaning that the van is this, the van is that, and then you're having to deal with that, and it's sucking time out of your day. So we end up getting a lot of drivers just turn up and go, can you do this for me while I'm here? Yeah, not a problem. So the internet, it has been the single biggest change in the last 20 years, but I think it's also been probably globally, it's the single biggest important thing in the last 20 years, probably since the invention of the engine, wasn't it, or the electric light bulb for us. But it's everybody's go-to. We all use Google, don't we? Google, yeah. and what have you.
Has it widened your scope?
We always pull customers in from all over the UK, doing new and used vans. With new vans, you don't need to come and kick the tires and look at it. It's either a monthly payment or it's a price, and those just get delivered to you. We don't need to get involved in those. Used vans, people still tend to have, although we do an excellent UK wide warranty, and you can take it to pretty much anywhere you want to, including the dealer network, and again that's part of the pricing structure that we have. I'm still finding people still like to buy local, deal local. It always amazes me when we've had a customer last week from Brighton, and you think, gosh, if you can't buy a used white Transit van between here and Brighton, but they drove up, it was exactly what we said, and they drove off in it. So we're quite happy about things like that. But we still very much, again through the Birmingham City affiliation, local people like dealing with local people. We're all human. The minute I hear, please forgive me, all Liverpudlians, but the minute I hear a Scouse accent on the telephone, I'm switching off. The minute I'm seeing on a website, it's a post box address, a postal address, not a commercial address, especially for new van leasing. Because there's that element of when it's going great, it's going great. But when there's a problem and I've got a proper complaint, how do I go to a post office box? Whereas with us, people know we can turn up and talk to you about any issues or concerns that we have, and the internet can't do that for you. We can all hide behind emails, but we're still quite old. We have old-fashioned values. Pick the phone up. I'll say this to our guys. I'm just going to be, no, pick the phone up first, then do your email, because you'll achieve more in a two-minute phone call than in a 20-minute email sparring session. We're quoting chapter and verse, and they're quoting chapter and verse because the customer's realised he's got no spare wheel. You know, and that's probably one of our most significant challenges with vans not coming with spare wheels.
Yeah. When did that become an official thing?
It goes back maybe 7 or 8 years, really. It stems from manufacturers. Where can we make more profit and cut more corners? So things like spare wheels and tyres, which if you say an average spare wheel and tyre is £300, they didn't reduce the price of their product by £300. But if you're, say, Ford Motor Company and you sell 20,000 new Transits a year for the sake of argument, and you're gaining £300 a unit, Somebody somewhere is doing their job. There's an account. There's a bean counter that's enjoying
van
that.
Van drivers generally are doing miles, aren't they?
Yeah.
Van drivers, unless it is a local courier, are all over the place. Our goal is travel the country.
Yeah.
Not far to that, you haven't got a spare wheel. You weren't sure before that phone call is. Yeah.
Yeah. The tire fan kit is never as good as it sounds to me. But both cars and vans now, it's been a massive cost cutting exercise for manufacturers, but those price savings to them were never really passed on to the customer, and it's one of those things that very few people actually look for. But we live in that age of health and safety as well now, where all the big fleets, so most used vans on the road have come from a fleet customer, your big leasing companies, your big rental companies, and they don't want staff and customers changing tyres at the side of the road, in my opinion, because then it's, I hurt my back changing the tyre, so now I can't come into work for 2 days, but I was doing it on behalf of the business. Yeah. And I need to go and see a chiropractor. Yeah, it's a can of worms. And so a lot of companies now, certainly with the advent of mobile tire fitting services, which are prolific, just phone this number and they'll come out and change your tire for you. And regretfully, I would say a lot of people wouldn't know how to change a spare tire.
It's a lot of skill, isn't it?
Well, we can't get people to check their oil and water, so changing a tire is well beyond the remit. Yeah. Yeah, well,
my name is Matt Reading.
Yeah. I've still got one of those Collins atlases in the back of the car. Because when I go somewhere, I like to, I might have navved it to get there, but I want to look at where I am in that, we can go there, or we're not far from that, which you don't do on your phone, do you?
Yeah. Well, what I find now is because there's an Apple, the cars replicate your Apple maps, don't they? Yeah. Or they've got their own built-in.
Yeah.
And now they throw two different routes up.
Yes.
And even though you know where you're going, or you've got a rough idea, you still then argue with your car and your two different sat-navs.
Yeah.
Whereas before, you'd look at a map, follow the road signs.
Oh, can you remember driving with our parents back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, sat in the back of the car with the A to Z? Yeah, and your dad knowing, I know roughly where Liverpool is, we'll get on the M6.
It's the basis of a lot of domestics on it.
Yeah, oh yeah, we should have turned left back there, yeah. You should have told me 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, got upside down. Yeah.
Right, so we talked briefly earlier about COVID.
Yeah.
Obviously, lockdown, COVID, business interruption.
Yeah.
So what did that represent to you guys from kind of the first Boris Johnson? Let's look at some slides. I think we're going to have to...
I think we all adopted a very similar strategy from the outset of it'll be gone next week and it'll pass by. And I don't think we really understood it at the time. And I'm not really sure we understood it. Well, we understand it now in retrospect. We had a fabulous COVID. Being commercial vehicles were part of the supply chain, and being independent, we could move really quickly and react really quickly. And one of the great things that our competitors did, and by competitors I'm talking about the main dealers, the Fords, the Vauxhalls, sent out all their staff home and thought that was the right thing to do, in the sense, well, there were two things. It's the right thing to do because it looks good as a PR exercise, but they were looking at it as a cost-cutting exercise. Right, we're not going to sell any vehicles, send everybody home, let's max out furlough, and I'm sure there's still a lot of furlough stories still to come out from some very big brand names. And we just reduced our hours, and we put the staff on a rota. We utilise a very small amount of furlough for our administrative staff, but we were doing twice as much business in half the time during a working day. We had the appointment system set up, and we had, you know, the click and collect element of it, and everything was sanitised and masked and the screens will remember. But we were continually busy because...
What you put that down to? Was that airline pilots getting vans to become couriers and...
Couriers. Well, everybody was sat at home, internet shopping. I was doing the same. And we had a constant stream of people going, I can go and work for Amazon and earn X, or I can go and work for DPD or Evri or whoever, or do it for themselves and earn X. But what did they need? We need a van. Of course, the supply of new vans dried up because manufacturers had sent everybody home. And we talk about chip shortage and things like that, which came a little bit later on. So all the big auction houses were closed. There was no stock coming through. So we were very fortunate. I'd like to say it was my strategic planning But we had a lot of vans, and we had a lot of customers that wanted to buy those vans, and we were getting them out the door as quick as humanly possible, because our customers would do, we want to be on the road an hour ago. And we have a rental fleet as well. We were selling vans off the rental fleet. And then, of course, the legendary bounce back loans, people coming in with their bounce back loan. I want to buy a van. And this was forcing the price of vans up. So our cost prices hadn't changed because we were heavily stocked. But the retail price went up because we then couldn't replace what we were selling. And those that then woke up to the fact, the bigger groups, the bigger dealers, started going, oh, hang on, we need to open up here and give people access to the products that we've had. You know, we've been noble and fallen on our swords to protect those that need protecting. But you've got to be careful what you say about COVID, because you can offend everybody and anybody. But we maximised the opportunities that became available during COVID, and it gave us an extremely successful year.
From what were you thinking?
We might run out of vans.
We were very much at that point. So we were selling off some of the rental fleet, because they didn't want to hire. They were coming in with bounce back loans going, we've got this money and we want to buy a van. And you know, well, I can do this van, but it's got to be at this price. And again, yeah, we'll take it. Because we were available to provide the product and in a safe and COVID approved. But it was good for us. The market has now leveled back out again, and products are coming through and new vans are coming through. So it's leveled off again. But again, we were able to move very, very quickly. And that's the beauty of being independent. You're not waiting for somebody in a head office somewhere in a headquarters to make a decision that on the ground is, we should be doing this. You weren't having a committee make those decisions for you.
It's like red tape.
No.
Four teams meetings a week before you can.
Have a teams meeting about a teams meeting. Yeah.
So how did you then navigate? Obviously, off the back of that, then we had the market shifted with the chip shortage. There was no new vans coming out. Used vans went through the roof.
Yeah, used vans were great. Killed new vans completely. And new cars. The amount of microprocessors on a new vehicle, just a new diesel or petrol-powered vehicle alone, I think numbers in the hundreds. But you need all of them for the vehicle to work. So the used vans, and again, we're a prolific used van dealer as well, stood the test of time, stood the weather. And again, we had a good time through that. Prices went up again. We were taking on more staff, etc. But the new, there were a lot of stories at the time which are true, and they're still on new. There's still large elements of, from our own experience, of parts not being available for new vans, because the manufacturers are back into putting new vans on the road. Whereas the van you've got, if it's gone wrong with a part on it that's essential for the running of your what is now a used van, they don't seem to be really giving much consideration to that. It's now get new vans out, and the used vans will take care of themselves. But from a car and van perspective, you've only got to look online. There are lots and lots and lots of examples with cars and vans sitting there for 12 months waiting for the want of a part. And the manufacturers, I think, shot themselves in the foot, because they were saying to their customers, yes, it is under warranty, but we haven't got one, so just leave your van there. But there was no ancillary support then of, we'll contribute towards you having a van, or you having a car, vans particularly, or we'll loan you a van. There were no courtesy vans, because they'd been selling them all off through COVID and beyond. So I think a lot of manufacturers lost a lot of loyalty throughout that period, and probably have still throughout that period. Every manufacturer and new van has its own idiosyncrasy, but some manufacturers stood up for their customers a little bit better than others. Yeah. And we have long memories, as that great saying is, that we don't remember the price, but we remember how you made us feel. Right. Yeah, during that transaction. And I think a lot have learned from it, but the difficulty for main dealers, who are prolific everywhere, they're in that rock and a hard place, because it's the manufacturer is dictating the pace, and it's the dealer who, yes, they benefit from the profit, but they also then get the downside of the pain, don't they? Because the customer doesn't care about the shortage. I want my vehicle on the road, especially vans, because
it's
I don't know any van that isn't or hasn't proved to be a need rather than a want for any customer. Because if you're not going to work, you're not working, your customer's not paying you, or you're letting your customer down. And you know, whether you're a one-man builder or an electrical contractor with 50 drivers on the road, your customers just want you there. They're not interested.
Literally, time is money, isn't it?
They're not interested in excuses, however valid those excuses might be. Yeah. Thanks, mate. How did you find it yourselves? COVID. And I know you said in your email it was difficult.
Yeah, well, we were doing work for Westminster Fire Service.
Right.
Putting wireless access points in from, so we were able to carry on working as an emergency service provider. But other than that, like, probably 84% of our work's in retail. One day they all said, okay, it's in Boris, we're closing the shops. See you when we see you. So our repeat business thing stops.
I found we did the very British thing. I don't know whether it's just British alone, but a lot of staff that I was seeing, can't wait to go home, can't wait to get sent home, can't wait to not be working, and I'll pick up my, I'm still going to get 80% of my wages or whatever it might be. There wasn't the Dunkirk spirit, was there? No. From a lot of people. We were lucky, but in that sense, we've got...
That's where you find out a lot of bad people. Employees. And again, same old thing, isn't it? As a business owner, you can't be expected to have any member of staff that should even feel 60% of the way you do about the business because they're an employee. Yeah. But at the same time, it was very eye-opening. We lost some staff off the back of it.
Yeah.
Because our engineer has been all over the country. Are we getting paid 80% to sit at home, just drinking all day, living that leisurely life? So then when I had to come back to work, I mean, we had work. We had a contract in Scotland, some storage facilities, doing some planned maintenance.
Mm.
And this is when restaurants and leisure were still closed. So we were asking our guys then to go to Scotland, stay in a hotel. There's nowhere to go and have a pint after work.
Yeah.
So it was even on that side, I kind of see both sides, but we were saying, well, you know, we've won this work in COVID.
Yeah.
We're trying to secure the future of the business by bringing more work in. But yeah, that means that you've got to go to work.
Yeah.
So yeah, when they came back then, it was the attitudes on some of the engineers.
I think we all saw it.
Changed completely.
We had, on a simplistic level, we have valeters work for us, and we treat them well, and they're paid well, and there's an X pound per hour. And they've been, had one guy with us for 8 years, and then he went, oh, Amazon are offering this pound per hour to go, or parts picking, so I'm going to go and do that. When you have that conversation, well, if you want to work, do 12-hour shifts in a factory and have somebody time how long you go into the toilet, and you know, it breaks to the second. And we had two leave, but they did come back to us. We did take them back, to be fair, because they've got wherever they went, not a very nice place to work. Didn't like it. You know, ruthless. You're treated like not very well. So can we come back? So, and because we were having recruitment difficulties, if I'm honest, you can come back because you know the job. We know you can do the job.
Yeah.
And we entrust you to do that, which is a big issue. But yeah, we had no problem with doing that. Whereas Sophie's a bit more ruthless. Sophie's like, no, they can't come back. They've left. They're dead to us. And being a lot younger, you have to remind me, you have to temper all of this.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't leave on bad terms. They left because they thought it was better for them. And now they've learnt it hasn't. So the grass wasn't greener on the other side, which will make them more inclined not to do that again in the future, which seems to have worked.
People can't have the freedom to go and do that.
Well, it's very cliche, but we empower everybody to get on with the job. We're not micromanagers, and I've no interest in being a micromanager. I trust people to do the job. I mean, if it's not quite going right, you always have a little word, don't you? But we've got good people, touch wood.
So where do you sit going forward in the future? Big hot topic, EV, infrastructure, electric vehicles. Obviously, there's more and more vans appearing, DPD, and the courier companies are local.
Yeah,
have quite a lot of main fleets, don't they?
The EV market, for cars and vans are chalk and cheese. In fact, the numbers are out there for EV cars. The sales of EV cars are dropping off, aren't they? The big spike was there, now it's gone. I can only speak from our experience. So if the majority of our customers are either a sole trader or a up to a medium-sized limited company that might run up to 40 vehicles, we've got one or two very large ones, have no appetite for EV vehicles, and we actually get, it's honestly zero inquiries for EV vans, because we come back to the internet, the customers have seen range anxiety, charging infrastructure, and then you see, so yes, you do see Royal Mail, Amazon, you see the big companies flashing their green credentials. We've just bought 50 brand new electric vans of whatever ilk. And you think, yeah, that's great, and it's a great PR campaign, but you run 40,000 vans. So what is 50 or 100 or 200? So yeah, you've ticked a box with your credibility. But again, go online, there's large numbers of these very big PLCs with electric vans sat around in compounds, having never been used, never been charged, not being used by the drivers. Because that 50 vans might represent £1 million investment, but to a £1 billion company, it's not a lot. Firms like yours and ours, we're going to use that van and we're going to carry on using it because we've paid for it. It has a cost to us. But there is no uptake. Used EV vans, and I'm seeing 12-month-old, 24-month-old used EV vans with 1,000 miles on go through auction houses, and they're achieving, I would say, on average, a third of what the price was new.
Right.
Now, a diesel van is not achieving a third of what the price was new. They're achieving maybe 60 to 70% of what they were new, because there's an appetite for an end user to buy that van. But we have bought what we thought were some good value EVs used, and by luck or fortune, we've managed to move them on, but we've moved them on within the trade network, not to end users. So we're just not getting the appetite for them at all, and we're not getting the appetite for them new. So obviously we can offer some great EV products, vans new, but we're still, on the very, very rare occasion where we're doing a quote, the customer's going, yeah, quote me on a diesel Transit or diesel Peugeot as well, and they are choosing to go for that. Whether there's they feel safer in that, or they're more comfortable with that, but infrastructure is probably the number one issue for it, very closely by range anxiety.
Well, we had this conversation as well in regards to what you do and your staff then. You need to go back and they need to charge the EV, then are they putting that to their time, or have they, and they've got to stop at services and they've got to do that?
It's part of a working day.
You're getting charged for
And I'm sure there are plenty of staff members out there who will happily go, boss, I had to spend 3 hours at Strensham Services charging the van up today. What do you do, eh? What do you do? Yeah. But that's where we are. The infrastructure, I think, you know, As a country, we're quite an old country. So when you've got people living in Victorian terraces or high-rise flats, or, you know, how's your driver taking that van home to charge it up overnight to go to work the next morning? Are you then at that, and your business owners, you would know this better than me, in that sense of, does he bring the van back to the yard? Mm. Well, I've got to come from Derby. I've got to come back to you. I'm not doing that on my time. So I'll be back at the office for 5:30, which means I've got to leave Derby at 4 o'clock, and then I'll leave the van there and I'll drive home in my car. Well, where's the green credentials going then? Because he's driving his car to work, he's driving his car home from work, his car might be an older car that's high polluting. But then, you know, very modern, from my perspective, very modern diesel engines and modern petrol engines are extremely efficient and extremely clean.
I'm not sure, was it Toyota who just came out with some innovation in diesel engines that blows the
The technology is there.
It's redundant technology, but it's had no publicity. And
I think whichever government it is, it's the HS2 syndrome. We're so far into this now, it's going to be really, really difficult to get out of it. Because they can't tell everybody tomorrow, right, your used van, used car, it's petrol, diesel, has no value, it's worth zero, you'll tank the economy, because there must be billions and billions of pounds worth of vehicles on the road. You know, it forms part of your balance sheet, it forms part of my balance sheet. And it's, you know, they can't just say that they have no value. But the 2030, 2035, that's going to keep chopping and changing. I think we've still...
You think that's the case? You think that's...
Yeah, I think that would push forward, yeah. They made a very bold statement from the outset, which was too much. But probably wins a lot of votes among elements of voting communities. But I think we're heading towards it. I still think we're more 2040 and beyond. But I still think... You mentioned Toyota there. I don't know if it's Toyota or Mazda. We're still waiting on hydrogen. Hydrogen fuel vehicles. The technology's there, from what I'm reading, from what I understand. Toyota, I'm pretty sure, have been running hydrogen cars for extensive testing, and it's working a treat. And you go to the pump and you fill up and you put your hydrogen in and it emits water vapor. And I don't profess to understand it, but my understanding from what I'm reading is it's far less consuming of materials, the raw materials, in making a hydrogen car, and the transportation of moving materials to make those cars than electric cars and vans. You know, we come back to the chip shortage. A lot of that was down to electrical cars as well, was it? People wanting Teslas and no Teslas available, other brands are available. But I still think we've got hydrogen to come. Still think hydrogen is there, but they're keeping it. They're keeping it in the wings.
Is that the same thing as the rubber tyres that are unpoppable?
Yes.
That last forever.
Yeah.
That aren't on the market because
the technology's there.
The big guys make the money if you bring out the sustainable.
We could go down the whole Illuminati route of the cabals that actually control the world. But the technology is there. But I think each successive government has committed so much to electric. But with them back to the infrastructure just doesn't exist. And I don't really think that the infrastructure will ever exist for full EV in the UK or anywhere else, to be fair, without massive, 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 I won't say investment, but massive spend. Yeah, and then you've got the digging up the roads and whatnot. And then,
and even the mining for the cobalt, isn't it?
It's not to
meet anything like the targets they're talking about, it would take 50 years of reopening and opening new cobalt mines
it's mind-blowing, isn't it? But you're back to, well, if he takes his van home, his works van home, and he does plug it in at home, how are you paying for the electricity? And then do you reimburse him, and is there a taxation on that? And then does that make it's not like, oh, I've spent £100 on electric, here's £100 of your wages. Well, then you've got NI, PAYE, it's a
nightmare. And even on the back of that, companies that we used to work for, bigger companies with a lot of engineers, kind of two different types of engineers, one that is going wherever, it's fine.
Yeah.
Another one that will go to the book, right, well, I'm taking my van, like you say, I'm bringing it back to the office.
Yeah.
Because these tax connotations, insurance connotations, then certain policies, you're not allowed to drive the van out of works time.
Yeah.
Trackered. So once you sign off, you are not insured to take that van then.
It's a minefield. But ultimately, from it comes down to your consumer, our consumers, and it's not just me, I speak to lots of other dealers who I value their opinion highly. There is no demand for EV vans, and the demand for EV cars is dropping off. We actually do have a new car leasing element to our business, which we don't overly promote. And we did a lot of EV car, particularly Teslas, in the last 2 to 4 years. Those people coming back now to us. So the people like yourselves who buy their vans of us, and they go, can you sort a car out? Yeah, we can do that. Yeah. Of the, I would say, probably 80% are asking us to quote for a diesel or petrol-powered vehicle and say we're not going to go back to EV because when you've got the kids in the car and there's a two-hour queue at the motorway services and you're down to 4% or whatever it might be, stress levels are rising.
That's pretty much the exact experience. So we've got a Mokka. The other EV cars are available. So my wife's got a Mokka. She had that exact thing happen a couple of years ago when it snowed randomly. She was either side of Stratford and the the miles left on the car just started zipping down. Yeah. Followed me in a panic. I thought I had enough, but I haven't got enough. And I got a Founder. Took her to a petrol station. Charger didn't work. Yeah. Said to the guy in the petrol station, what's going on? You know, said, oh, it's external. It's got nothing to do with the actual garage.
Yeah.
Okay, took him to another garage. There was a queue of cars there. She had to go on the long stay because the super fast charger, someone's already plugged in.
Yeah.
Sit in the car then with a blanket for 3 hours.
Yeah.
When she's going then, the guy come out that was on the super fast charger, he hadn't charged his car, so yeah. He had to join the queue for the slow one. But even that on the vans, I know that the Mokka, the bigger Vauxhall vans, it's two of those engines in one of those vans, isn't it?
Yeah.
So even that, and having seen that engine, it's meant to be 168 miles, it's nothing like that.
No.
Not in real terms. So you're putting those in vans then, and the weight of a van, especially in low bearing then.
I think typically, I'm talking across the board, I would say the average mileage range is about 80 miles for a van. Which again, in a city multi-drop delivery pass where the driver can just take it back to the depot and somebody sorts it out overnight is great. But if you're sending an engineer to Manchester, you're now factoring your time of recharge time, and you've got to be realistic on that. But I suppose the EV smugness of when we had the fuel crisis a couple of years ago, where everybody was posting, well, I don't have any problem because I plug it in at home and everything.
Yeah, it
all evens itself out, doesn't it? And we've been down those roads before. But I can only say for us, the EV demand for vans doesn't exist. And it's proven when you look at vehicles go through auction with 1,000 miles on it, a year, 2 years old, and people are buying them because they're incredibly cheap. And as we did, we'll buy it as a punt because it's cheaper than buying a diesel van. But then you sit there watching it and the phone not ringing on it. It makes a heck of a difference. Yeah. You wouldn't want to overcommit. But I've known businesses, especially new vehicle leasing, that have set up on the back of e-van or e-car, and that bubble has well and truly gone. And they've now re-diversified back into normal cars and normal vans because the demand has just dropped off the scale. And of course, the taxation's changing as well, and it'll carry on to change. The government are not going to not tax people indefinitely.
Solar panel debacle all over again, isn't it?
Yes.
The first come out, the tariffs were brilliant, it was really worthwhile. Yeah, and then the government realised, oh, wrong, and people are doing too well out of this. Peter that down a little. Okay. So we'll wrap up shortly, but just a word on Blues Business Club, Birmingham City Football Club.
Yes, the Blues. I think the Blues is definitely a business owners club because, we, as I said at the start, we experienced the high highs and we experienced the low lows. And if there was ever a testament to resilience and tenacity and digging in and keeping right on, it's the Blues, isn't it? And love them or loathe them, they're our team. Blues Business Club, we were the headline sponsors over the last season, and we've made some great contacts out of it and some great networks out of it. Had some interesting exchanges of business ideas and stories. Disappointing that it doesn't seem to be carrying on in that vein, and we've heard nothing from the Blues in regards to that, but obviously the season has started now. Villa, we used to have a similar thing as well, and they kind of do something similar as well now, but it's not in the same, doesn't draw as many people in, I think, from the diversity of backgrounds from our perspective. Having done the Villa ones, I found a lot of architects and lawyers, whereas I find Blues is builders and electrical contractors and sign writing companies, and it seems to be more our, from our perspective as a van dealer, it seems to be more our cup of tea. But we shall hope for automatic promotion for the Blues this year. We had our little wobble on Saturday against Reading, which we're over now. But I've got been a lifelong Blues fan. Some days you're quite proud to admit it. Some days you're not so much. They're Birmingham's team. I would like to see all the teams do well. You know, ultimately, again, it's very twee, but I'd love to see Blues, Villa, Wolves, Albion up there in the Premiership, or you know, top of the Football League, because it's good for the region. It generates huge amounts of money, Very excited to see where Blues go with the new stadium and the new ideas and the investment, which they seem to be carrying on with irrespective of where we are in the league and the league that we're in. But we wish them all the very, very best for the future. And we look forward to seeing St. Andrews at Knighthead Stadium soon.
Well, we were there Saturday, weren't we? And talk about mucking in. Jeremy Dyle was out the front, wasn't he? Causing traffic through the turnstiles, trying to help ease congestion.
Well, some beer.
Yeah.
Gratefully took it.
Yeah. Fair play to Again, going back to many owners, you wouldn't have done that.
No.
But I think they've got the... I think they're... It's a commercial business at the end of the day, but I think the heart's in it, which you, I think for many owners over many, many years, it was more of an ego trip than anything else, or a generator of revenue for other projects, shall we say. I'm excited for the Blues. You know, hopefully straight back up, and then maybe a couple of years back in the in League One, and then onwards to the Premiership. You know, I'll take 14th, 15th in the Premiership year in, year out, without any hesitation. And you know, hopefully Villa as well go on to have an even better year than last year. I enjoy the rivalry.
Yeah, it's sorely missed, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the takeaway for all of us.
Yeah. Having the rivalry with Burton Albion is just not quite the same thing, is it?
Derby
really?
Fans trying to create rivalry.
Yeah. They're going to be blown away when they turn up at St Andrews, aren't they? Mm. Be like Wembley Day out for them. Yeah. But fingers crossed for the Blues. In fact, we'll keep everything crossed, and hopefully this year is their year.
So, just before we wrap, we had a viral moment interviewing Dee Kelly the other week. She had some quite animated stories about Gary Buser, things that he did in the Celebrity Big Brother race.
So Dee Kelly's white dude.
Yeah, got it.
So have you ever sold a transit connector, Gary Buser, or anyone of that ilk?
No, I can't think of his blooming name. He used to play for the Villa. Mark went to Leicester.
Griper.
No.
Rod. No, not Mark.
Blonde-haired lad. Mark Albrighton came in a few years ago, and we all knew who he was. And he was buying a van for his father-in-law for his birthday, I think it was. And we're all sitting there thinking, this is Mark Albrighton, you know, it's a big thing for us. And one of the nicest guys I've ever done business with. No Charlie Chips, no, I'm this person, I'm that person. His wife was lovely. He brought his dad in to collect the van. He was absolutely first rate. Whereas, and I use the Mark Albright story because at the time, they're still there, Land Rover are next door to our site on the Tyburn Road in Erdington. And I'd got a Land Rover. And having just dealt with Mark Albright, lovely guy. Went into Land Rover to collect my car from service. And there was an Aston Villa player there. And he was the complete opposite of Mark Albrighton. And he was giving them the big, do you know who I am? Why have I got to book my car in? Why can't you do it now? Do you know who I am? I think we heard, do you know who I am, several times. And there was a lovely, very petite blonde lady sat behind the reception desk. And she said, yes, I do know who you are. She says, but it makes no difference to me. I give great customer service to all of my customers. She said, and I don't care what they do for a living. You'll have to wait your turn like everybody else. Now, do you want me to book it in for you or not? And there's a little group of people in the service department. We're all doing little like fist pumps and high fives. And you think, there's, you know, we talk about carrying yourself with style and class. You've gone from Mark Albright, and it was absolutely a lovely guy to deal with, to think, I wouldn't want to deal with this guy. Yeah, you play for Aston Villa, but you don't need to be rude or demeaning or have the wrong attitude, because that lady's going to decide whether your day is going to be a good day or a bad day, irrespective. Yep. But it was interesting nonetheless. But no, we don't... unfortunately, vans are not the sexy element of the motor drive. We make them as sexy as we possibly can. In fact, that should be our slogan, the van sales sixer. But we're not there selling Bentleys, unfortunately.
Since the 18, there hasn't really been a push, has there?
No.
PR push.
Yeah, we like a van, and I have grandchildren and children there. They love being around the vans more than the cars. They're more fun, aren't they? But no, it's been a good journey. Not over by a long shot, but when the bank comes to see you now to talk about your facilities, and they go, "When are you retiring?" You think, "Wow, we've been having that conversation." I don't know where you have the, what's your exit strategy?
Yeah, and I
don't have one. I said, I'll carry on working as long as I enjoy it and I'm doing it right. And when I'm not, I'll call it a day. But if you're asking me to put a date on that, and that really confuses them, they go, so like January 26th, and you're like, nope. But I've got to write something on the pad.
That's a difference, isn't it? The lifestyle business, then it becomes a thing. And then even with the gravity of employing people and the responsibility of people, because you become then the psychologist, don't you, the friend.
Yeah,
it's and you extend your family into.
Yeah, it must be the same for you. There's that element of how, I mean, we've taken it to degrees over the years, and I'll be honest. My happiest time in business is now, whereas when I was 30, I want this and I want that and I want 30 staff, and when we got up to those bigger numbers, I haven't enjoyed it, and I've had to. It's taken a lot for me to recognize it, that in myself, that actually, Steve, stop trying for that. Yeah. That's not who you are. And then finding those people to bring on that journey with you is really, really hard.
Yeah, you've got an internal dialogue where you kind of, in the idea that you stand still, you die, so you've got to keep pushing forward. But then at what point,
stretch or do you overcommit? We were part of the Vanarama group for many years. Overall, because they sponsor the football leagues, and I think at one stage, I think it was nearly 300 staff, and every day I won't say it was a battle, but every day felt like a battle. The MD founder of it sold out about 18 months ago to the Auto Trader, and I would say that when he was at that high, I wouldn't say that was his happiest time. And I get that, because staff are your number one. Getting customers is great, isn't it? We find customers. But having staff to maintain your levels and your standards, certainly when you're hitting 200, 300 staff, you've got HR departments and legal departments and things like that. And I think that's that top 1% then that are hitting those sorts of levels. But with that come huge overheads and huge costs.
Health connotations as well.
And
Dollar to the companies that step away through health issues from the whole stress of running companies to that degree.
I think we've all been there at our levels. I've certainly taken, I won't call it a self-care day, when I thought, no, going in today will be completely the wrong thing for me to do. I need to take that step.
Well, you're being the owner, isn't it? That you don't take 35 days off, you don't... No. Whereas your staff are now coming, right, I'm off next week, aren't I? You don't need to hear from them, do you?
No.
Whereas you at home, and it's like off next week.
And when it goes wrong, it might not be your fault, but it's your name above the door. And we talk about people taking accountability for themselves and responsibility for themselves. But at some point, how many people just go, oh, yeah, there's a mistake, and I made it, but you've got to deal with it. The book stops with you. Your name's above the door. So... there's the rewards, but there's also the risks element of it as well. But now, overall, it's been enjoyable. But as we came back to at the start, did I plan on coming into the motor trade 30 odd years ago? Nope. Am I glad I've done it? Yeah, I've had some real fun with it, and had some not such fun. But and people talk about it, don't they? We can all do the Facebook thing, don't we? At 5 a.m., I'm in the ice bath and I'm running 25 miles and I've had 74 losses this year and I've learned from every loss, and you're more successful when you have... Well, no, losses are part of the journey. But I don't revel in my losses and enjoy my losses. I might dwell in the mire for a day or so. But no, success and money, that's... That's what really it's about in that sense. And I think we're almost too frightened to say that now, aren't we?
Yeah.
And again, is it a very British thing? I don't know, where we have to be very low-key. I'm not talking about driving around in gold-plated Bentleys. But when you're successful and you're earning the money, my staff benefit from it, you know. And we pay as a basic salary, bear in mind we're independent, for a salesperson, we pay easily one of the highest basic salaries in the motor trade, because I don't want them worrying about selling. I want them to enjoy selling, and the bonuses and the rewards are there. And again, it's very cliched, but so, you know, if you earn £10,000 this month in commission, I'm happy, because I'm earning it as well.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, so everybody's happy. But you're all this ice bath, 5 a.m. I ran my 17th marathon this weekend and whatnot. Yeah, rein it in. But again, LinkedIn,
it's a bit something else again, isn't it? I think it began with, because everything knows engagements, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these are
click.
Like a couple of years ago, I went around people using picture terminally ill kids.
Yes.
And they were then getting congratulated on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they were those profiles, and I stopped in the end. But I used to put a little note and go, "Do you actually know the child that you're posting this picture?" Yeah. "Oh no, but I just want to spread goodwill."
Yeah.
And then the bio is so I'll get 10 million LinkedIn engagements.
Yeah. Well, you're up there with the guy. I gave my sandwich to a homeless man this morning. yeah. Just give him your sandwich.
Don't talk about it.
Move on. That's your reward. Mm. Yeah. People congratulating you on that and whatnot doesn't.
Love this, Alan.
Yeah. You're a true hero. Not all heroes wear capes.
Is my mind being in the photo?
Yeah. It's interesting, but I think we turn up, we do the job, don't we? And I think we're always underrepresented as if I say small business, I'm not talking the PLCs, the Virgins, and whatnot. And I think I'm pretty sure I read. Do we account for 80% of all employment in the UK? The SMEs. Account for 80%, but we always seem to get the rough end of the stick, don't we?
Without getting into politics, every government that seems to come in just seems to hit us with the stick, don't they?
Well, we now starting to hear the rumours of the minimum wage increases again, which went up very, very recently. And that added a huge amount to our bottom line. But you've got to pay it because it's legislation. And
so what someone I know in accounts was telling me was, although that just looks like, so I was looking at that and had the conversation, what's behind it? Why is that the case? But apparently that pushes the minimum wage earners into a tax bracket then.
Yeah.
So they become taxpayers.
Oh, yeah. The nobody in government's stupid. Whether you're looking at the people at the face of it, you Boris Johnson, there are the long-standing civil servants, you know, the permanent secretaries and whatnot. And those are the guys that doesn't matter to them which government's in power, because we'll do what we do. The Treasury, for example, you know, it's these decisions are made, and they're very deeply ingrained decisions. It's just who's fronting it at the time, isn't it? But that's probably, I'm not sure how true it is, but I'm starting to read about another minimum wage increase up to £15 an hour. Not sure it's true. I did read it on LinkedIn, and there was some commentary on it. And you straight away thinking, "Oh my God!" Do you know what I mean? Because
there's no reprieve, is there?
No, because then those people on £18 an hour. Well, hang on, they're catching up with me now, and I'm this skilled individual. But
so you're a business owner, then you're
never gets any. It never gets any easier running and owning a business. But I think we're all cut from a very similar cloth, aren't we? And that again, one of the great things about Blues, wasn't it? Everybody there, we're all of a level that you could have a conversation and understand what was going on with one another. But there's always the holistic coach and the house declutter a person and whatnot. Like, no offense to anybody, but life coach.
That's the one I'm looking for.
Yeah. So well, that was good.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you ever so much, Steve.
No, I enjoyed that. Thanks, guys.
Pleasure, mate. Thanks for coming in.
It's really more just having a chat, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like therapy, we say this, isn't it? It's like a little bit of therapy.
It's, you know, the market's tough out there. You've always got to have one eye over your shoulder and one eye on what's coming down the road. And, I think we do get the rough end of the stick from successive governments. What's coming back our way? It's like we've changed accountants recently, and we've been with the same one for years. I don't know whether you've explained. They just turn up pretty much once a year. Their website says they're going to do all of these amazing things with us, but then you realise, well, you don't actually seem to know any more than I do. Or you only when I raise it, then you talk about it. And they came in. It was last year. And they went, "Here's your tax bill for the year." And I don't want to pay any tax. You know. And they go, "You got to pay some tax." Yeah. Well, I don't want to pay that tax. What can we do? I said, because I know people who are successful, and their tax bill is virtually nothing. And they said with this, yeah, well, you've earned the money though. Yeah, I'm not disputing that, but how do we reduce that tax bill? And we recommended this other accountants came in. Same thing, we still paid tax bill. You went, well, why aren't you doing this all perfectly legal and legitimate and whatnot, but why aren't you doing this and this? Well, nobody's ever said. They said, yeah, but same scenario, most accountants, they're making money. They can pay our fees. They can pay the VAT. They can pay the tax bill. Thank you very much. But it's devoid of the website going, we will grow your business by 200% and all this. But you must get the same.
It's always been a bit of a joke in our office that as a company secretary, you outsource your accounts to an accountant.
Yeah.
Yet any financial discrepancy, anything that puts you in the dock financially, you are responsible. Mm. Even though you say, I'm not qualified in any way as an accountant, and that's why I would pay an accountancy firm who are.
Yeah.
Yet if something in the books then isn't right, you're the one that sits in the dock.
Yeah.
So it's akin to us kind of going out and, right, we're going to rewire your house. No, I'll rewire my own house.
Yeah.
Happen. No. Well, qualified electricians.
Back to our names above the door, isn't it? Yeah, we have van dealers. So we don't make it any more sophisticated than that. And I think that's where things with LinkedIn now, it's become more sophisticated, isn't it? And you're no longer a van dealer, you're a CEO and founder.
Yeah.
And the amount of CEO and founders, and you think, a CEO and founder of what? I'm looking at you and...
Put your job title.
CEO and founder. I'm going to do these things in my future. Okay, well, Claire, shout me up.
When sales done maverick.
That. Yeah, sales maverick, yeah. So, yeah, platinum gold star sales leader. I'm connected to one guy, and he's he's the UK's best van sales director in the UK. You've spent your whole life working for somebody else. The number one best van sales director in the UK is not working for a Mercedes dealer in Wales. You have your... Yeah, come and talk to me when you've got all the debt and all the worry and all the... And then, well, God, we've got to pay the VAT. And I forgot about the VAT. So come and talk to me then. But you're self-fulfilling as you're the best at. It's a bold statement, isn't it? But then do they do it to court that...
That's it.
Yeah, controversy.
It's got, it's got your attention.
Yeah.
Your attention now. He just needs to get down to Wales to buy one of his vehicles.
Yeah, I'm still just on Facebook. Yeah, Facebook like. Yeah. Just have the best curry ever. Like. Yeah. My partner says, you don't even read the comments.
But
then we all have that fear of missing out with LinkedIn, don't we? They're smashing it on LinkedIn. We get you would see the same. We're in a sales based industry. And bear in mind, it's been a really challenging year. It has been a really challenging year for various reasons. And we're smashing it. We've achieved 200% of our target. And put a number on. Because if your target's one and you've done two, yeah. If your target's 200 and you've done 400, I'm coming to talk to you about what you're doing. But put a number on it. Do you know what I mean?
Very fine line, isn't
it? We've exceeded all expectations. Yeah, did you have Nando's for lunch instead of a sandwich today? Team outing, and that's one of the good things about the Blues, wasn't it? The outings.
Yeah.
Our guys love it. They're more gutted about, we're not going to fly or the Chinese or whatnot. But I don't know. Come back
unique, isn't it? Without networking, isn't it, kind of thing?
Yeah, I've tried BNI. I get invited to a lot of BNI. If it's handy, I'll go and have a breakfast and whatnot. But all this, and you've got to give these referrals and you pay these fees. And I think we've lasted 30 years, 20 years without worrying about it. I'm not too worried about it now. But I'm not into that high pressure. I love the American way of doing things. Yeah. They're generally quite positive. But I went to a BNI one. And he'd obviously just come back from the States and he'd done the course. I'd say it wasn't in my name, but I'm going back a few years, and he went, so all of you people in this room, if you don't sign up today, you're losers. And I thought, you've just offended 90% of the people in the room. And he went on to do the, so we're going to come round, my team are going to come round each table, and there is no going away to think about it. You are signing up today to be members, or you're losers and you're leaving the room in shame. Oh, we'd have a challenge, don't we? The guy's crying. He said, yeah, you sat there. I said, does that make me a loser? And he went, yeah. I mean, what's your business do, mate? You know, I'm not talking, what do you do? What do you bring to the economy? And we had this, but you said your mentality's all wrong. And I said, because I'm not signing up with you. I said, from the very outset, you've just offended everybody in the room by saying they're losers if they don't sign up to your product and they're not allowed to go home and think about it. I said, so if I go home and think about it and I phone you up tomorrow and go, yeah, I'll sign up. Are you going to say no? Well, no, we'd have a period of grace, obviously. You know, you think, mate, no, you're not...
Not my angle.
Yeah, not my cup of tea. But this constant referrals thing, it's like we've got a good business that's built through hard graft. And it's nice when people refer us, but if you're relying on that, then you don't have a business, do you?
No.
In that sense, but... And you're only as good as what you did on your last job. We all get those. Yeah. We've got over 14,000 happy customers. I always want to put, we've got 9 that really don't like us. Because again, it's 5 stars, isn't it? I don't subscribe to everybody that has 5-star reviews, do you?
Well, this is the Trustpilot. It's a big thing in your industry, especially, isn't it?
And we don't use it. We use Google reviews. And we're quite fortunate because our customers are people like you. And they'll read a bad review and it'll be a rant.
Yeah.
But our customers will come in and go, bloody hell, I read that review from that bloke. So he don't like you, does he? And they go, no, and it just sounds like a dickhead. And you're like, because they get the same guy. Yeah. It wasn't. And they're either 5-star or 1-star. Nobody just gives you a 3 or 4. No. But we've got several.
That's
reviews.
A bit more we're in, isn't it? If there's a few 2 and 3,
yeah.
You're like, oh.
Yeah.
There's a 1 and you're like, yeah, look at these.
Yeah. I'm staying in some fabulous hotels. And they've had 1-star reviews.
Yeah.
And you think, well, I thought it was great.
Someone had the arse when they got there.
Yeah, we've got a couple of... The other problem is the ones that aren't even your customers that leave bad reviews. And we've had a Nigerian review recently. And you can just tell it's bogus, but do Google review them. But Trustpilot, they screen them for you before you put them on. But again... Are you being? We're stuck between that devil now. Be authentic and fake it till you make it, which is another bugbear of mine. Which is it? Do you fake it till you make it?
Well, even with that, my understanding.
Would you be authentic?
My understanding with that is that it is possible to fabricate Trustpilot reviews as well.
Yeah, we did.
£300 a month as well. You're kind of thinking they offer.
Yeah. I was regional director for Vanarama, and Vanarama was sold 2 years ago for £180 million. So you know, it's a bit. But we had a whole team dedicated to Trustpilot and Google reviews and what, and that's where I learned, you can screen that and it comes in and you filter and you head it off and then we'll phone up the customer and go, hey, you're not happy with it. Yeah. If we send you a £50 Amazon gift card, will you change it? Yeah. And they go, yeah, right there. Because they're over that initial, I'm disgruntled because, and you get a new van delivered. And the floor mats were dirty. That's a 1-star because it's a brand new van. Really, it's a 3 or a 4, but and they're like, would you change it to a 4 or above? They go, yeah, 50. And but they go, if we send you £100, would you make it 5? Yeah, because people have bought, aren't they? Mm. But to Vanarama, that's a company that turned over £300 million a year. It's a drop in the ocean, isn't it? But I learned a lot from it. But you can't win everybody over. But as long as you're doing the job right, you should win more than you do, shouldn't you? Really? Hopefully, fingers crossed. Well, I won't take up any more of your time, shall
I? No,
I get to honestly get to keep that.
That is yours.
Should have brought you some pens now. Quality that is.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. I hope that was okay for you.
Perfect.
So I wasn't expecting it to be a chat.
Yeah, casual. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's our whole USP that we took the bits from the Birmingham. The Blues Network.
Yeah.
We're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but for this, we're having a chat and we're learning about your business while you're just casually having a chat. And people who watch it will be like, oh, we didn't know that, Steve.
Yeah.
And this is a nice guy. And but we've had one person get business from it. We're not saying you're going to get any business.
No, it's not working. Yeah,
no.
I find it's interesting.
One of our mates watched it. He's like, oh, that guy from recruitment's insane. And there's like, yeah, yeah, he said, did Wolsey Green. Now he's got like 10 temps off him.
Yeah.
Just happened, didn't
it? And like, so I've been asked to do them before, and you just go, yeah. But if it hadn't, if you'd have just been coming to me cold and yeah. there wasn't the Blues Business no, Network, I'd have said, no, I'm all right, mate.
This is the conversation we've had as well. Like, we've got that Henrietta, the CEO of Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce, she's going to come and do, because they do one.
Yeah.
So I'd just hit her off.